The unrest. Podcast.
Welcome back to the Unrest Podcast. I'm Caitlin Stansel.
I'm Carter Coyle.
And I'm Madeline Green. We just launched our first episode last Monday. And if you're joining us again, thank you so much for the support. We promise more haunting stories, history, and real life spooks for each episode to come.
This episode is titled Taphophobia. And if you don't know what that means just yet, don't worry. We'll explain in just a bit.
Yes, I don't know. Don't worry, we're going to educate you.
Hey, I had to look up how to pronounce it.
So. Oh, yeah, no, I didn't even try to pronounce it.
All you need to know right now is that it has to do with fearing a certain kind of death. So let's start with this question. What would be the worst death scenario that you could possibly imagine? You know, which method of death do you fear the most?
Oh.
Yeah. Well, coming from me, where I am, I'm dying every day from different things.
What?
Yes. Madeline is a frequent WebMD searcher.
Oh.
Okay. I've had a few strokes already today. I had a stroke earlier, I think. But I think my biggest fear of death would be fear of dying from a snake bite.
Really?
I am deathly afraid of snakes. Ask Caitlin.
I've had to catch her one time. This little tiny snake. It was about as big as an earthworm. And she straight up jumped into my arms.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know where this fear of snakes comes from. I think
really?
I honestly think when I do remember being little and my mom and brother kind of like torturing me with them a little
bit. No, what the hell?
And then finally she would be like, all right, like we got to stop this. It takes Madeline hours to calm down after seeing these snakes.
Oh, I love how she's like, I don't know where it came from. Maybe it's because I was tortured as a child with snakes. Yeah, that's probably a good guess.
But yeah, so that's my biggest fear is death from snake.
What about you, Carter?
I can relate to that because I'm also very afraid of certain creatures. I haven't looked online and found as an entomophobia, which is not a fear of intimacy. It is it is a fear of insects or certain kinds of insects. So I have my whole life since I can remember have been very afraid of a certain kind of bug. In the sweet state of South Carolina, we call them palmetto bugs. Don't say it because I cannot stand the sound of the word.
Roaches?
Yes. Thank you, Madeline.
Roach.
So I've been like literally terrified of them since I was a kid. Got therapy when I was little. It sort of helped, but basically.
You had therapy?
Oh, girl.
For roaches?
Yes. Girl, yes.
What do they do?
They tried to hypnotize me or something, but.
You're not afraid of roaches.
So my biggest fear would be like anything involving that. Or I don't know. I really fear dying in a car crash because we've covered them so much as reporters. There's something like super scary to me about you're just driving, doing your everyday thing, and then bam, your life is over. And half the time it's like no fault of your own. And all of a sudden you're just dead. I just think that would be this such a sad and traumatic way for you to die for your whole family versus like having a chance to prepare for death, which nobody wants cancer or something, but I do not want to die suddenly, I don't think.
Right. Yours is definitely something you could actually worry about. I'm not sure.
Right.
Snakes.
Snakes.
Maybe I was on the wrong
like a pit of snakes. Well, I mean, I hope I could never die of insects either, but that would definitely be the one for me.
True. What about you, Caitlin?
I have a real fear of heights.
Oh.
Not like roller coaster heights or flying heights. You know, if I'm in something that's moving and it's kind of out of my control, I'm not afraid. But if I had to be the one like walking on the edge of a mountain cliff, that scares me.
So would you like never bungee jump or skydive?
I mean, I might do that, but I would really have to like hype myself up about it. But that's also kind of where it's out of your control at that point, you know?
Yeah. Like, so flying and stuff. Are you scared you're going to like die falling off of these cliffs?
Okay. Just as an example, one time AJ and I went to, it was this ropes course and it was an inside ropes course. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the very first level was maybe 10 feet off the ground.
Right.
I get up to that level. And then from there, it kind of like, you have to walk across these ropes to get to the next, like stations. And I could not walk off of the platform.
Really?
It just made me want to throw up. And
honestly, I can relate to that. I didn't think I was scared of heights until like one time me and Matt went to Vegas and we were going up this like Eiffel Tower type thing they had. And when I got up there, I was like, oh yeah, no, I'm not scared of heights. And then I got up there and I literally wanted to like get on my hands and knees and crawl.
Yeah. Well, and also, anything that has a floor that you can see through.
Oh, it's creepy.
Which is also kind of like a fear of heights thing because you can see beneath you.
That's like that sky one in Chicago. I haven't been to that, but I've seen pictures and that seems like it would be really terrifying.
Yeah.
But side note, I do want to bring this up because I thought it was interesting and something I had never thought of before. But one of our managers that works with Carter and I, we were talking about this story where, you know, if you flush baby wipes down a toilet, it like clogs up all the systems. And there are people who are paid to dive.
Yes.
Into, what are they called? Not retention ponds.
They were sewage divers.
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
They so go in with
big,
like
huge pools.
And they have like cranes and they hook them to the big blobs of tissue or of toilet. What are they called? Wipes.
Wipes.
And they like haul them out. And it's very expensive for the counties and the cities. So these people make money, but you'd have to make money if you're going to pay me to
you
dive
couldn't pay
into
me enough.
No.
You couldn't
is
pay
this
me enough.
Like at the sewage plants? Like, you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like those huge pools, they dive in that. And what they dive in is this suit that basically is like a hard case suit, like where their helmet is and all. So you already can be claustrophobic if you do this job because you're literally trapped inside something.
Pitch black dark.
You can't see in front of your face and you're diving in poop. I mean, that would be a terrible way to die.
That's a bad way to die. And that's a rough job. That's just a rough
job. All of the above.
I can
we went around the newsroom when I did like a you paid for it and how much it costs. And we went around the newsroom and asked people how much would you charge to do this? And a lot of people said you literally could not pay me enough. You could pay me enough. It would just have to be a lot.
Yeah. I would do it for like a quick million or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It depends on how far down you have to go. If it's like, you just get dipped in and then you're pulled out, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah.
But also,
so that's actually what this podcast is about. About is sewage diving.
Surprise! We tricked you.
No, just kidding.
For the name of this episode, tachophobia, those people who suffer from that, their worst fear is being buried alive, which should be everyone's fear too, but it's just not something that maybe you think happens very often, which hopefully it doesn't. Caitlin? Yeah.
At least not in these days.
Ooh.
Well, I don't know if my pick this week suffered from tachophobia or not before her death, but her story has likely been the reason that some people do worry about this now. That's if you believe the legend that surrounds her final days. Ooh.
That is pretty scary.
That was, yeah, that's, what if your death caused a phobia?
I'm sure there would be lots of, roaches wherever you're buried.
Okay. Thank you. That's why I want to be cremated. I do not want bugs in and out of me the rest of my life.
Right? Isn't that crazy to think about though? Like,
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Caitlin. We digress from your story.
No, that's okay. It's a great conversation. It's something that, you know, you don't really put a lot of thought into unless you're meaning to talk about it. But I'm sticking to the low country of South Carolina for this one. And I will warn you, while the people I'm about to tell you about are real and some parts of this story are factual, as any good spooky story goes, the fine details, they've likely been embellished over the years.
No.
And there's been nearly 200 years since this story started for Julia Legree.
Oh, good one.
The great one, yeah. She was born in 1829 to one of the richest cotton men in all of South Carolina, Captain William Seabrook. And she grew up on the plantation that was named after her father, Seabrook Plantation. And if you've ever visited the Charleston area, there's Seabrook Island. So that kind of gives you an idea of where.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Wasn't Seabrook in the Notebook? Or did I make that up?
I think maybe. It was.
Sure. I think that's where they were from.
That's right? So cute.
That would make sense.
I'm going back to Seabrook to get Noah.
Oh, yeah.
And Captain William Seabrook.
Okay, well, continue. Many stories describe her as this young girl at the time of her death. She was actually a young woman, around 23 years old, and she was married at the time to John Berwick Legree. Now, if you look anything up on this, their last name is actually spelled and looks like it is pronounced Laguerre, but it has a little bit of a French pronunciation, so Legree. This is a really prominent Charleston family name, so if you come to this area, there are a lot of Legrees here and, you know, different areas named after Legree. And he, too, owned a plantation. This was a popular thing to do back then. And the thing about Low Country, South Carolina then was, especially for these wealthy plantation owners, they would spend some of the year in the city of Charleston and then some of the year out on their plantations. And it was on Edisto Island, where Legree's plantation was located, that Julia came down ill. And it's not really clear what she was suffering from. Some versions claim it was diphtheria, which wouldn't have been unusual for illnesses like that to spread in and around Charleston because it was such a popular port city. They were bringing lots of foreign products and people in and out, including slaves. And because diphtheria can cause inflammation of the nerves and paralysis, it does seem like a likely culprit for Julia's death-like state. She essentially became unresponsive, and with medical science, not that great back then. Legend has it that it was at that point that Julia was placed inside the Legree family mausoleum at the Presbyterian Church of Edisto Island.
I don't like where this is going.
I know. That mausoleum is still there today. You can actually go check it out. If you look at any photos or go visit, though, one thing you'll notice is a very prominent part of the crypt is missing. It's large stone door that's gone.
Oh.
That's a bit of a more modern change. I'm going to tell you why.
Oh.
Back then, when Julia's body was placed inside, the door was closed and the mausoleum was sealed shut. Well, it wasn't until that door was opened back up years later to bury another member of the family that they realized they had made a very tragic mistake.
Oh, gosh.
Ugh. Yeah.
It's saying it so
crumpled at the bottom of the doorway were Julia's remains. And on the inside of the door remained the kind of indentations that could have only been created by someone desperately trying to claw their way out after they were buried alive. Bum, bum, bum.
Damn it.
Can you imagine like how terrible you would feel as a family?
You should feel really bad.
And they did, obviously. Good. After that shocking discovery, they tried to do the right thing. They laid her body to rest by entombing her remains securely and closing the door once again.
Ugh.
They felt awful, though. And a few days later, they went back to pay their respects again. And that's when they found the door was open.
What? Hmm.
So this isn't just like a wood door in your house. This is a huge, heavy stone door. Some places I read, they said it was made out of marble.
Dang.
But you can just imagine it's kind of the same weight as that mausoleum stone would have been.
So right. This is not like the wind blowing it open situation.
At first, they might have thought that. So they kind of shrugged it off just thinking, oh, well, maybe we just didn't close it as tightly as we thought we had after the funeral. So they were like, all right. Let's really seal it shut this time. You know, we're going to make sure it is closed for sure. And they left again. Well, weeks later, a clergyman from the nearby church, he makes his own spine-tingling discovery. The door was back open.
Ooh.
So he calls someone in, likely not knowing what had happened before, and said, hey, we need to close this door. Not sure how it got open. Can you just take care of that?
Ugh.
But this scenario would happen again and again over the years. Huh. And people just got tired of fighting with Julia over this door situation. And they finally just said, all right, we're going to take it off. Clearly, she's not happy about this with the tragic way that she died. Let's just finally let her rest in peace by taking this door off and letting her know if she wanted to escape, she can.
Yeah, she's
pissed.
Yeah.
Yeah, she is pissed off.
That is really sad.
It seems like, though, that she was not able to finally let this go, because there have been some very personal accounts shared from people who had their own kind of unique, spooky experiences there. And these are a little bit more real life. You know, these aren't necessarily connected to that legend. It was under an article written on Edisto Beach's website about Julia's legend that a woman named Sue said she was out there taking photos of the Legree Mausoleum, and she noticed a strange shadow appear in one side of the doorway in some of those images. She said it creeped her out, so she showed her husband and suggested that he take some photos of that same area. He did, and the shadow was gone. Well, she just kind of assumed she was being silly, letting the creepiness of the cemetery get the better of her. And that's when she decided, hey, I'm going to take a couple more photos. In them, the shadow was back, but in a different shape. She said there was nothing behind her to make the shadow, and it did not appear to be her own. Plus, it was kind of a cloudy, overcast day, so the shadows were really few and far between. And then this other encounter that I found really interesting was posted from a guy named Brandon. He said he and his brother visited the mausoleum one night.
No, you shouldn't do that.
I was like, wait, God, why are you being
You're
so
just
mean?
inviting the spookiness.
Do not go to mausoleums at night, okay, people?
And just as he was about to go inside, they both heard an extremely loud growling noise that growling. Scared them both to death. They took off running, and when he looked back after about 20 feet, he said there was nothing there. You can believe it was Julia's ghost if you want to or not. Or he suggested it could have been an animal in the nearby woods, but needless to say, he described it as a pretty freaky night.
Ooh.
Yeah, any kind of growling going on in the cemetery is a no-go for me. Yeah.
You gotta
actually growling in general is a no-go.
You got to assume they kind of knew the history and the ghost story, so that had to freak them out.
Oh, yeah. I can only imagine.
Even if it was just a coincidence that there happened to be a rabid raccoon right nearby to growl at them.
Yeah. I mean,
that would be scary.
Carter's getting a little sippy sip over there. I see her.
I can hear the straw squeaking.
I thought it was cute.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And that's the legend of Julia Legree.
I love that story.
That's a good one.
I actually, what's funny is I had looked at doing that story myself, so I'm a little pissed off at you about that. But that's an awesome story. I mean, it's very sad, obviously, but like to think that something like that happened, I mean, it kind of just blows your mind.
Well, and I was reading in a couple of articles, people that tried to debunk the legend, and they said it is questionable if her death really happened in that way. There's not a lot of documentation, you know, kind of citing her cause of death and this and these events happening. But like I said, this happened nearly 200 years ago, and by word of mouth, you can just imagine how things get embellished a bit, but it doesn't make
something,
it any less
yeah.
interesting or fun.
Something yeah. had to have happened to create that legend in the first place.
Well, because obviously there's a name for this type of phobia, so it happened at some point to even come up with some kind of name, whatever
yeah.
it was. I can't pronounce Legree-phobia.
Legree-phobia. Taphophobia. All right, y'all, for today's spook school, let's talk about post-mortem protection, mm-hmm. the invention of safety coffins. Have you heard of a safety coffin before?
I actually have, because I'm not a normal person.
Because we're weird.
But it actually really is a cool concept.
Well, while it's rare, at least we hope that you get buried alive, there are documented examples. Caitlin just shared at least a legend of one, and there are actual examples of people accidentally being buried alive. Even as recently as in 2014, I saw one in the interwebs.
I forgot. I had told you guys the story that a nurse from up this way had told me about a janitor in the bottom of one of the hospitals around here who saw a body bag moving.
Oh, and, that's nice.
Yeah, and went back, and this poor man was actually alive. So this was literally like a month ago.
Oh my God. Yeah. So mistaken death obviously happens. You just hope that it gets caught at some point before you're
under the ground.
So kind of flashing back to the 19th century, the famous ominous storyteller Edgar Allan Poe, he kind of tapped into everybody's fears at that time. He wrote a short story called Premature Burial, where the narrator is so terrified of being buried alive that he talks to his friends about it. He builds this whole elaborate tomb with signals and levers that are supposed to help him escape if his greatest fear of being buried alive ever comes true. Well, the Smithsonian website I was looking at says it's not clear if Poe then inspired this kind of rampage of taphophobia, or if that was already existing at the time and he was kind of feeding off of it in his story. But what we do know is that the fear peaked during the cholera epidemics in 18th and 19th century. And according to this History Answers website, in 1905, this English reformer named William Tebb found accounts that 219 people at least had been nearly buried alive. 149 people had actually been buried alive, and horrifyingly, 10 cases of live dissection.
What?
Yeah. So I guess starting to cut into someone or doing the autopsy and then realizing, oh, oops, they're still alive.
Oh, wow.
So all of this led to this really creepy invention, safety coffins. So these are coffins that are outfitted with alarms to help if someone awoke and found themselves buried. And not just coffins, but mausoleums too, you know, and the idea is setting up kind of bells and whistles to alert the outside world. So in 1868, this was kind of cool. I'm going to pull up a picture and share it with you guys, and we can put it online too. In 1868, there was a, quote, improved burial case that was patented and included an air inlet and a ladder and a bell so that the person could ring the bell and alert someone on the outside if he or she was too weak to climb the ladder out of their grave.
What's funny is this reminds me of a movie. I feel like I always talk about movies that have to do with this, but Double Jeopardy.
Oh, I love Double Jeopardy. Yeah.
And he puts her in that like mausoleum in the casket.
Yeah. Can you guys see this?
So the ladder is on the
inside. It's almost like... Picture almost like a tunnel, a column that goes straight up to the outside world. So you're down here and you would crawl up here if you were alive. And then this rope here is a bell hooked to the outside. So that was kind of one of the examples.
Interesting.
This next one, another elaborate invention that was patented in 1882. So a few years later, it's basically this T-shaped device right here that if a person is buried, their hands go on the end of this device, and if they start moving around in the coffin, it twists, allows air down into the coffin, and it kind of indicates on the top, uh-oh, somebody's moved this. So I guess your lookout is coming by being like, uh-oh, Mr. Rufus, not so dead.
Damn it, Rufus.
And with this one, this certain patent, there was even like an add-on later that had a battery-powered alarm. So this is not just like, this is like if you wake up a lot later, we've still got ways. Some of these had feeding tubes, pyrotechnics that would shoot fire out, a glass insertion in mausoleums. You could put this glass in front of the body's face so the family could come by and check the glass for signs of breathing. So, I mean, really, like, kind of desperate ways to make sure that you don't end up dying alone. This is kind of a weird one. It's more modern, where you can put, like, recording devices or something in there, and you can, like, keep recording messages to your dead family member, and it'll play in their coffin, okay?
Okay, don't, that's weird.
Like, don't do that to me, please.
Then you're dwelling on death at that point.
Exactly. Another early and less sophisticated suggestion was to insert a trumpet-like tube from the ground down into the coffin, and then every day the priests who were checking the graveyard could actually give it a sniff and make sure that it still smelled like ripe decomposition.
Yeah. Those poor people that were tasked with doing that.
What a job. And if they could hear movement or cries and maybe it didn't smell like decomposing body yet, they could make sure the coffin was dug up. So that's like, these poor priests go to preschool. They're like, this is not on the job description. But despite plenty of these ideas and even like demonstrations from inventors who were willing to be buried alive to show off their safety coffins and how they worked, there's really no documented cases of anybody being saved by a safety coffin. So it sounds like it might have just been kind of a way to prey on the fears of folks and make a lot of money, or maybe just offer comfort to people who are afraid of dying, which most people are. So nowadays, the modern practice of embalming bodies and draining their blood and replacing it with preservatives, that usually makes sure that the body's dead before it's buried. So they would be much more likely to catch someone who was just in a deep coma or something way before they were actually buried. And that is your spook school today about safety coffins.
I love that. What's crazy is there was this one place that I went where they had set up these coffins that you could purchase. Some of them were like crystalled, or like people like actually pay to be buried in these like elaborate coffins.
What kind of trade shows are you going to?
I know. I'm not telling.
I'm just kidding.
For real, like, it was at a horse show that I go to, and it was the strangest thing. I'm not sure why it was there.
Yeah.
But I saw a picture. I'll have to find that picture and show you guys, because I was literally like, wait, are they selling coffins? And yeah, they're like, yeah, they sure were there.
Weird. Yeah, I don't think I'd want anything that elaborate, because it just seems like such a waste. Yeah.
I mean, to be that kind of salesman, I'm sure it's hard to find your target audience.
So they go to horse shows. Horse people.
They're like, oh, they have a lot of money. We'll target them.
Yeah. Everyone wants a Guns N' Roses coffin.
Room just continually plays their greatest hits.
Oh my God.
Through all eternity.
I kind of want that. So a little backstory on our real life spook today. I kind of talked about it with the coffins, but for those of you who don't know me personally, I ride horses in rodeo. Doing that, you get to travel literally all over the country and you meet so many different people. Well, Jill Behrens is one of those rodeo people as well, and her story takes place in Sauk Center, Minnesota, at the Palmer House specifically. The Palmer House is a historical hotel in Sauk Center. It was built in 1901 and expanded in 1916. The hotel was listed on the National Register of Historical Places in 1918. Beautiful brickwork. Some of the windows actually contain stained glass imported all the way from Vienna. So pretty nice hotel.
Ooh, how pretty.
And I'll put some pictures up on Facebook and Instagram so you guys can kind of see what it looks like. But it was catering more towards the traveling salesmen who found not only somewhere to stay the night, but there was a hotel and a bar. And the real kicker, as is with any historical place, it has numerous reports of paranormal activity. The woman who owns it now said she didn't believe in ghosts until she actually bought the hotel, but has had several encounters since then. She talks about a stranger who told her in a dream kind of a spot to go look at in the hotel. I don't know how true this is, but she says when she got there, she dug up what looked like rib bones in the basement.
Ew.
A McRib or a person?
Not a McRib. A real rib.
A historic McRib.
No. The McRib.
It had the wrapper and everything.
The McRib probably didn't decay at all because it's disgusting.
Okay, I've never had one, but I don't like when people knock McDonald's too hard.
My friend Casey and her family, they like celebrate when the McRib is back on the menu.
Mom, Dad, I'm bringing home McRib. But no, she had a box of ribs.
But it's not funny.
But she put them in the box. And when she went back down there to get this box of ribs, of course, there was no box to be found and it had vanished. Guests and staff there have reported hearing voices, temperature shifts, doors slamming. There's a ghostly cat that is said to jump on guests' bed at night.
Ooh, I would like that.
And one of the more common accounts is the sound of children bouncing a ball or running down the hallway. But it's also been investigated by a number of really popular paranormal investigators. There is no known reason why this place is such a hot spot. They have said that there was a fire at the previous hotel before the Palmer House, but there were no records of any fatalities that came from that fire. So who knows?
Interesting.
But obviously, it's a pretty spooky place, and that is exactly where Jill's story will take place. So take a listen. Jill, welcome to the Unrest Podcast.
Hello, I'm happy to be here.
So kind of take us back to when this story takes place and where it takes place.
This was probably about, I want to say, 7 or 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. This took place in Sauk Center, Minnesota. We're rodeo stock contractors, and we had a rodeo in that town that weekend. And this was kind of before we had little kids, so we decided to just get a hotel room instead of staying in the horse trailer.
Right.
And we knew about this hotel, but, you know, it's one of those things. It was kind of a small town, really the only hotel in town, and didn't have much of a choice. And, you know, I mean, you kind of, you know, you hear that there's possibility that it could be haunted, but uh-huh. You never know, you know. And and so we decided to just stay there because that's, you know, the only place to stay. Cute little hotel.
Right? I was looking at pictures of it.
It was. It's very pretty. It had like a restaurant in it that was beautiful. I mean, and they would place set it like every night. Once I get into my story, I have some more on that. But you know, so like it was just really rustic, very vintage looking. So you felt real comfortable being there, but yet it did have a slight feeling to it. You know what I mean? Like when you walked in, you immediately kind of got that, you know, little bit of a chill.
Right.
You
know,
so it was kind of cool in a way, but in a way it was kind of like, oh, okay.
What have I gotten myself into?
right. I mean, and I've always been one who believed in that kind of stuff. In a sense, I didn't quite know for sure if I wanted to experience it or not. So kind of how it I don't know how to begin the story, but I had a friend, and this was probably 5-6 years before even this took place. I had a good friend of mine give me a coin. It was a guardian angel coin, and I had always kept it in my coin purse because I figured if I put it in my coin purse, I would always have it with me. Kind of just one of those things. I just, you know, didn't really pay much attention to it, you know, after that, but it was always in there, but nobody really knew about it. You know, my husband didn't know about it or anything like that. It was just kind of a personal thing, and mm-hmm. wasn't that big of a deal. So it wasn't like anything that was well known. And so that day, moving ahead 5-6 years, we were at the rodeo, and we were at the rodeo grounds all day getting the rodeo ready. And I decided I was going to go back to the hotel by myself and take a shower before the rodeo had started. And it was no big deal, just kind of like the same thing that we've always done. Up to the room, and I had grabbed my clothes that I was going to wear that night, and I had set them on the bathroom floor. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I just kind of just lay them on the floor, and I went to take a shower. And I do remember when I took a shower, feeling like a very cold sensation in the room.
Wow.
And it wasn't like an air conditioning all of a sudden kicking in and blowing on you, or a fan or anything like that. Like it was a very cold chill that just kind of like filled the room, but I didn't really think anything of it. I thought, all right, like, you know, this was an old hotel, so like it was already kind of warm,
yeah,
clammy feeling to it. They didn't have, like, your air conditioner was literally a window air conditioner. So, but like I said, I didn't really think anything of it. I thought, you know, I just, it's just my imagination and whatever. And I had gotten out of the shower and dried off. And when I got out of the shower, I noticed my clothes were folded and set on the toilet. Okay, like, I'm pretty sure I just laid my clothes on the floor, pretty much in front of the toilet, but, like, they were laying on the floor in kind of a pile, and I was like, okay, no, I didn't do that. So, that was the first, like, okay, this is strange. Like, there's nobody in my room. Nobody came back to the hotel with me, so there was nobody there.
Right.
And I thought,
if it was a maid or something, surely she wouldn't come in there while you're taking a shower.
No. And then my son and my husband and everybody else from the rodeo were still at the ground. So, like, there was nobody in the room. And I'm like, okay, like, that was really strange, and I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do next.
Yeah. But,
okay. So what I did was I grabbed my clothes, and I left the bathroom. And I just went out into the bedroom area and set my clothes on the bed and proceeded to get dressed because, I mean, I had to get back. So it wasn't like I had a whole lot of time. And I got dressed. And you know how, like, when you put your jeans on, you put your hands in your pocket and you shove your pockets kind of down just to kind of situate everything. Well, when I put my hand in my pocket, there was something in my jean pocket. And I mean, us rodeo people, you know how it is, like, you have your jeans like dry cleaned.
Right.
So
right.
They were starched and like everything. So it wasn't like it was something that just come out of the wash. And I was like, well, did I leave some change in here? I would have thought the dry cleaner like would have
taken it out.
Yeah. So I took it out of my pocket, and it was that Guardian Angel coin.
That's wild.
And I was like, okay, now I have goosebumps, like, from top to bottom, full on. Like, do I run out of this hotel room, or do I, like, just take it as, like, somebody looking over me, you know? I immediately had that feeling of, okay, like, somebody's trying to tell me something. I should maybe, like, keep this Guardian Angel coin in my pocket. Because, I mean, we're putting a rodeo on. Maybe there was a reason, you know, somebody was looking over me that day. And so, like, that nervousness and that scaredness of what just all happened. And, you know, there's possibly a spirit in this room. It went to, like, okay, like, somebody's trying to tell me something, and maybe I should keep this in my pocket. And I was entered that night. Nothing actually ended up happening or anything that I was like, oh, that's what they're trying to tell me. But I still felt like I needed to leave that in my pocket the rest of the night for some reason. And maybe that was what it was. Somebody did end up looking over us for some reason that night. But that was the thing. Like I said, nobody knew. Even that coin was in my purse. Somebody was telling me something. Well, then later that night, you know, I had told, you know, everybody kind of what happened or whatever. But that night when we went to bed, my husband and I, it was kind of one of those, like, do we want to shut our eyes or not? what's going to happen? But several times through the night, we did feel that cold sensation again. Nothing else weird happened in our room or anything like that, but I did several times feel that cold sensation. And later on, that next morning, we went down and had breakfast, and we were telling the you know, the ladies and the people that work at the hotel what had happened. And they said that they have several spirits in that hotel, and one is a little girl. And a lot of times people will see her actually playing in the hallway. And they said that night, someone caught her. She likes to play jokes too. Like, she likes to do funny things, I guess. And, well, they will set the tables up that night for breakfast in the morning, and she'll rearrange the tables.
That sounds so funny.
And she had rearranged the tables that night too. So it's, you know, it was one of those experiences for me that I was like, okay, this just confirmed. If anybody has any doubts, I can honestly tell you I had an experience with a spirit that now I'm a believer, if that makes sense. You know, I mean, I completely know what happened that day wasn't somebody playing a joke on me, because there's no way nobody would have known about that guardian angel coin in my coin purse.
Yeah, and you would think if it was someone, by now they would have told you, hey, right, that was me.
Right. Right. Totally wish, you know, I totally hope so. But that's kind of, you know, my experience that I had with the hotel. In a sense, I guess, been on TV. Like, they've had those ghosts, I don't want to say chasers, but ghost people actually be in that hotel and do. I've not seen any of the shows or anything like that on it, but this is kind of funny. I still have the room key. You know how sometimes you leave and you forget to leave the room key in the room?
Yeah.
Or something. I still have the room key, and it's really neat. It's like really cool vintage. Like, it's just really neat, and I thought it'd be neat to do something with it. But I'm scared to death, too. Like, I really feel like I don't want any bad mojo to happen with
True.
It.
So True.
I totally just leave it in a drawer.
That One is so day, funny.
I might just give it back to them, because I just kind of have, like, a strange feeling about it. I don't
right.
know.
Yeah,
it
you'll have to not... send me a picture of it.
I will.
What it looks like.
I will definitely do that. I actually just found it again not that long ago, and like kind of reminisced about it or whatever I remembered, and I was like, yeah, I just feel like I need to give this back to
yes
them.
That is so funny. And like you said, you told your husband and stuff. What was his take on it? Was he open to the idea of?
At first, he was just kind of like, yeah, right, you know, it, like most men. But that night, when he felt the cold sensation too, he was kind of like, yeah, this is a little bit more, you know, strange. I don't know if he still believes me, but he obviously felt how there was something in the room that night.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, and it was kind of funny, too. Like I said, I felt kind of nervous about it, but I didn't feel like it was anything that was going to hurt us or was there to scare us. I guess I felt like after it had dealt with, I guess, the guardian angel coin, like they were there to almost protect us, if that makes any sense. You know? I don't know a whole lot about spirits and ghosts or anything like that. You know, I've never really kind of read up on it or looked into it or why they're there or anything. You know,
yeah.
But I just know that whatever that was that day, somebody was trying to look over us, you know, for good.
That's what I really like about this story, is so many other stories are more like scary and it took them by surprise.
Right.
But this one is actually a good spirit. So it
right.
makes it a little more lighthearted.
I want to keep telling myself and keep thinking it was the little girl.
Yeah.
You know, and I wish I knew the story behind the little girl and, you know, why, you know, what her story was and all that. Maybe I will. Maybe after this, it'll still kind of open up that. I kind of feel like I don't want to know, too, because, I mean, if it's a little girl, there's got to be a sad story. And I don't know if I really want to dig deep into that. I want it to be a positive thing.
For sure.
And I feel like the situation that I had, trying to turn it into a positive and whatever, I just don't want to have the memories or the thoughts of it being something sad. We'll say this, I am glad I didn't see anybody.
Yes. That would be, I don't know if I could handle actually seeing a ghost.
No, like that was my biggest fear, is waking up in the middle of the night and standing at the end of my bed. It was definitely an experience that I won't forget, that's for sure. And I still have the coin.
Yeah.
It's still in my coin purse. I don't take it out, you know, I mean, I have no reason to, and it's just one of those things. I feel like there is some guardian angel attached to it.
Yeah, so is it an older coin, or was it something new?
I think it was something new when she had got it. She had given it, and I want to say it was like, I'm trying to remember the reason why we got it. She gave it to a couple other friends of mine, too, and we're all just amazing friends, but yeah. We were really good friends at the time, and she was going through some hard times. She had just lost a really good horse of hers, mm-hmm. and I think I was struggling with, you know, something that I had, and she just felt, you know, it'd be kind of nice to give this gift to all of us, and you know, I don't really remember what the occasion was or anything like that, but I know it was, you know, I think we were all struggling with something at that time and thought it was a nice gesture. And I always thought, well, what can I do with this? Because it's just a coin. Like, there's no necklace attached to it or anything like that. So you can't really, you know, wear it. And I thought, well, I always, you know, have my coin purse with me the majority of the time. And this would just be somewhere I would have it when we went to rodeos or something like that. So I always just kept it in there. And I mean, this is probably 10 years later, or wow. Gosh, it's got to be even more longer than that, that I've held on to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the story of the hotel and everything, I just, like I said, feel like there was some guardian angel attached to it. So it's just something I'll keep with me, you know, as long as I do. Every once in a while, you know, you take your change out and you put it in a jar or something yeah. like that. I'll, you know, realize I had done that, take it back out, but it's always there with me.
Wow, that's interesting, but it doesn't seem like maybe a scary thing. It's just more of a, ooh, weird, I need this in my pocket tonight or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I love those type of stories.
And that was an angel coin, right? So maybe mm-hmm. it was an angel.
Yep, who knows? Well, thanks for joining us for episode number 2 of the Unrest Podcast. Again, we want to hear your personal experiences. Email the details to us at theunrestpodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can call us and leave us a voicemail of your story, your real life spook in its entirety. Give us all of the gory details. Just call 843-564-2101. That's 843-564-2101.
We'll be back with the spooky content next Monday. But for now,
unrest in peace.